Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Franchise Interviews, where we're asking the franchisepreneur who owns one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed about owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. We have a great show this morning. Today, we're meeting with Dr. Scott Shane to discuss his recent book, The Illusions of Entrepreneurship, a new book that challenges the myths that we hold about entrepreneurs in America, who they are, what they do, and how they succeed. The book shows that the reality of entrepreneurship is decidedly different from the myths that have come to surround it. Dr. Shane is a leading expert in entrepreneurial activity in the United States and other countries, draws on the data from extensive research to provide accurate, useful information about who becomes an entrepreneur and why and how businesses are started, which factors lead to success, which predict a likely failure. And that's coming up in segment two of Franchise Interviews. Our first segment is being brought to you by Franchise Interviews, LLC, and Franchise Interviews gives enough close and behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews as well as get inside tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Our weekly franchise radio show on Blog Talk Radio, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisors, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and franchise attorneys. And don't forget to subscribe to our monthly franchise newsletter, which is a must-read for anyone looking to buy a franchise. And also check out our new podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. And Don, welcome back to another edition of Franchise Interviews. How's your week going, my friend?
Good as usual, Marty. Going pretty well.
Busy week?
Yeah, busy week. Battling a little bit. The franchise lending and, you know, business loan industry is tough right now.
That's what they say, yeah.
A little bit of a battle. And so I got that going on. But,
A lot of changes. I guess it keeps things exciting too, doesn't it, Don? It's never a dull moment in your industry.
Right. Well, I don't mind challenges. I just, when it gets to be too much of a challenge, it becomes
sure.
A headache.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. And we've been talking about this now, you know, for like the last 6 months to a year. You know, all the changes going on in the financing end of things.
Right.
You know, so it is certainly interesting. So we'll have
It's tougher. It's even why what we, you know, good thing is. Is that a company like ours, Diamond Financial, more and more franchisors and people realize the need for our type of service because we work with so many lenders. And, most people go into their, you know, local bank. It's even tougher than ever to get financing. You know, you need a specialist who knows who the aggressive lenders are, who knows how to package up a loan, all the, you know, the details. That's why a lot of loans get declined. You have to know what the lender's looking for and so forth. So just a lot involved, but it's tougher, it's harder. Lenders are taking longer for a decision.
Right.
But things always go up and down.
Sure, absolutely. And it's something, you know, we should really, you know, you and I have been talking about it, Don. I think we've done it twice in the 2 years that we've been doing the show is to, speak about the topic of financing a loan for a franchise. You know, it's might be something that we might be able to squeeze in.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to do that
in 2007 or definitely in the beginning of, 2009.
Right.
Maybe we can begin the year with something like that as well, you know, with guys like yourself and,
a lot of lenders,
You know, your James Stoltz and guys like that. So
And even discussing different ways to finance your business. You know, not just the business loan SBA. There's other different ways to, you know, finance a startup depending on the total investment size. So that'll be a nice show.
Absolutely. Our last show, Don, we met with Lauren Johnson, who's the VP of Franchise Development for Navis. And Navis is a commercial, not a retail franchise, that dominates the exploding market for custom packaging and shipping services. They specialize in packing and shipping of large, fragile, and valuable items. I thought it was a great show, a very interesting concept. This is the first time we've had a concept like Navis on the show. What were your thoughts on last week?
I thought Lauren did a great job of telling us what they're all about. I think it's interesting, like you said, it's not retail, it's commercial space that people need to operate this business, which is a little easier on the investor, not pressured to find that A solid location or commercial space because, you know, what's their niche? They do the larger or delicate to handle with care type of items is what the owner eventually fine-tuned the business and realized that was a real need and niche, and that's what Navis is all about. So I like that part of their business.
Yeah, it was. It was a smart move on the CEO's part, you know, to make that decision. It's important service, too, if you think about it. You know, I think you and I are very big on the repeat sale factor. You know, I mean, a lot of times, you know, you're taking a chance with a business and, you know, I mean, sometimes your life is in that package, you know. So I think Navis gets a lot of, you know, Lauren was saying this, they get a lot of repeat sale, you know, because you're comfortable with their business. So I also like, I think it's a great franchise for someone leaving corporate America as well. You know, I think it's a nice transition. You know, I mean, when you're working for corporate America, I mean, you're typically working, let's say, you know, 9 to 5 or 8 to 5, whatever it may be. So it is normal business hours. You know, there's not a lot of nighttime work. There's not a lot of weekend work. I like the training that's provided by Navis. It's very detailed oriented. And the technology, you know, one of the questions, it's become my favorite question on the show is, you know, how is the franchise using technology, you know, to help their franchisees? And they make it pretty simple for their franchisees. I mean, there's not a lot of thinking involved. It seems to me like you just have to have a good personality.
Right.
You know, and
when they began franchising in 2002, and so they're growing nicely. It hasn't been that long ago they started franchising. I guess they're going on 6-7 years, and it was interesting too, Marty. She said about how some of the other, you know, shipping and you know, companies in their industry, she kind of doesn't really consider the competition.
You know, exactly.
Sometimes they refer people to them because of their specialty and you know, packaging those handle with care type of.
I mean, isn't that great to have someone like UPS, you know, refer you to Navis, you know, saying, you know what, we won't do it, but you know, these guys will do it. You know, I mean, it's fantastic. So yeah, she wasn't too concerned about the competition, which so I thought they were a great franchise. I'd definitely like to have them back, you know, sometime in you know, next year, you know, and just watch the growth of a lot of these franchises. You know, I mean, it's just been amazing for you and I to watch the growth of some of them since we've had them on the show a couple of years ago. So pretty interesting.
Yeah, we're going to go back the list of, just, I was just going to say, the list of a lot of shows we did in our first year and maybe check in and see how they're doing.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
What do we got going on today, Don, or over the next couple months?
Well, we have Dr. Scott Shane, The Illusions of Entrepreneurship, the book he wrote, very popular. We're looking forward to that. He'll be on in a few minutes next week.
That's great.
Brian Spindell of PostNet franchise. It's another shipping and postage franchise that's, you know, as we've learned, you know, different than Navis. We're excited to have Brian on next week. On September 18th, we're meeting with a franchise called Baby Power.
That should be interesting.
So that's your nickname right now with your little son, Baby
Power. Well, I was telling you earlier before the show, you know, I mean, he was you know, crying last night. He's in the teething phase, you know, which I know you're very familiar with your twins, you know, going through all that stuff. So, I mean, sleep is kind of becoming a priority today, you know.
Yeah, went through all that, Marty. September 25th, meeting with Holly Shilliday at Snell and Wilmer Law Firm.
Right, and that's Kevin Himes. Kevin Himes is affiliated with that firm as well. We've had him on the show. Actually, we've had several attorneys from Snell and Wilmer up to this point, and just fantastic, very informative shows.
Right. October 2nd, franchise I Sold It, which is an eBay concept franchise, William Finkman.
William Finkman, I think it is, Don. Yeah, and he's interesting because he's one of the youngest franchisees, I don't want to say ever, you know, in the history of franchising, but pretty young. I mean, he's in young 20s, and, you know, so he's got an interesting story as well. So I'm looking forward to having William on the show.
Right, yeah, and that's our goal, to have more franchisees on, you know, for, you know,
in 2009,
going into
absolutely.
Next year. Right, we want to hear the story. How they went about their search, how they chose the franchise, how was training, how was the startup process.
Right.
Yeah, you know, always interesting, and really what the show is all about, to, you know, give our listeners all that type of information.
They're always fun shows, you know, having the franchisees on the show as well. You know, it's you know, you get to hear their story, what they were doing before they actually became a franchisee, and a lot of them are very you know, inspirational.
Definitely.
And we have Moran Industries, I guess, on the 9th, right? And, I mean, there's just, if you go to the website, Don, and go to the Franchise Radio page, it actually has a listing of the shows throughout the rest of the year. I know we have, like, Cousin Subs coming up in December. We have Valpak in December.
Right.
Another interesting one in December, a franchise called 10 Till 2, which specializes in staffing for part-time people, you know, people looking for just a part-time job between the hours of 10 to 2. You know, there's a lot more stay-at-home moms today. And, yeah, so, I mean, just very interesting concepts that we have for the rest of the year. And, you know, excited about 2009 as well. So it's going to be another great quarter and been a lot of fun. So this was something that I wanted to I didn't get to finish last week, Don. It was from the E-Myth. And let's see, it was by Erin Duckhorn, and talking about, and I think you have this article, Dino's 7 Tips to Start the Franchising Process. We ran out of time last week, but listen to this. It says, make sure your concept can be franchised by researching other companies that are similar to yours. Look for the reasons they were successful and where they could have improved. SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats analysis is always perfect for this type of venture. Spend the time to set up your company to operate without you, right? That's the Michael Gerber approach, right? Right now, if you can't run without you, then it won't be a franchise, you know? And I think that's a very powerful statement as far as what franchising actually is. And for those businesses considering going the franchise route, you know, that's something that you do have to consider. If it can't run without you, you're probably not ready to run the franchise yet. It says this will not only give you well-needed days off, but the opportunity to work on your business and not in it. Trademark your name. I think when we had Nancy Leonard on the show, franchise attorney, she mentioned how important it is to trademark your name. It says, this is a long process, and you might not be successful on your first try. As a matter of fact, I had to change my company name to pursue my franchise dreams. Get help. It says, once you and your attorney feel comfortable with a name that'll work, search for a franchising company that will fit your needs. I personally went with a company that will not only set up the documents, etc., but will also help market and sell my franchises. Now, we've had concepts like that on our show over the last 2 years, haven't we? And again, I'm going to have to think quickly, but I guess like FranSmart might be one, right? They specialize a lot in the they're very big on the restaurant franchises, I think.
Right.
FranCorp, I think, is another. They'll kind of like help you set up like a UFOC and do all that other stuff. You know, and I guess you can get connected to like some franchise brokers that are out there, you know, your FranNets, your FranChoices, and
the Entrepreneur Source, there's several.
Entrepreneur Source, you know, again, because the selling concept is not so easy. Also, Dr. Robert Needham, he has a Franchise Inc. We had him on the show about 6 months ago. They're fantastic franchise brokers. I mean, they're experts at selling these things as well. So just kind of interesting. Here's your end of the business, Don. It says, get capital. It says, if they say it'll only take $60,000 to franchise, make sure you have double of that number. And I think you say that sometimes. More companies fail before they have a chance to succeed due to limited funds. And I know you're
And it's not only having the additional funds in your business account, maybe through finance and get plenty of working capital, but also have plenty of personal reserve money. Money to fall back on, you know, maybe hopefully not needing to even make money from the franchise the first year. Having other types of outside income, it's important to give yourself some time to build up the business.
Absolutely. I totally agree. It says set your goals high, but not too high. What I mean by this is build your franchise company slowly in such a way that it'll be stable. It says my goal is 25 stores in 5 years. Moreover, don't be upset if some franchisees fail, because they will. It's just the nature of the business. I thought that was an interesting statement, you know, not to, you know, I mean, again, that's something that shows up on your, they change it from the UFOC to the FDD, but it's kind of like a little mark saying, you know what, this particular franchisee failed. Now, again, you can't really blame the franchisor for all of those situations. Not everyone is cracked up to be, you know, a franchisee, you know. I mean, again,
I disagree with that a little. If you're setting your goals high, it's really not to have any failed franchisees. I guess things happen. You know, part of setting up your system is to work out all the kinks. Unfortunately, some bad things happen along the way. But, yeah, I mean, always avoid having any failures, because that's something that is a real that can hurt.
And we've seen the numbers, too, Don. You know, I mean, and again, who knows if they're accurate. You know, after reading Dr. Scott's book, you know, The Illusions of Entrepreneurship, you know, you are a little skeptical about some of the numbers sometimes. I mean, we've seen the numbers saying that, you know, a franchising has a success rate. I've seen it as high as like 93%. You know, I think a lot of times they say over 90%, you know. You know, you wonder, you know, who came up with that number, you know? So I think I'm going to be a lot more careful now giving out statistics sometimes, you know, after reading Dr. Scott's book. You know, you have to consider the source sometimes. So as I said, it was certainly considered an eye-opener. It says, be flexible, realize not everyone is in the same, is the same, and understand that regardless of what mistakes you make, they will only lead to better decisions in the future. So I think that's important, you know, learn from your mistakes. So I thought it was just a great article, you know, kind of helps you put things in perspective as far as
interesting.
How.
Interesting. Right, I'm looking at it from the franchisor perspective of them setting up their franchise business.
Exactly.
All right, what else we have here? I got something here from the Associated Press, something written by Joe Belbruno. It says, Frozen Yogurt War Dethaws Tart New Brands Hit U.S. Nice fancy title there. It's out of New York. It's kind of funny. It's interesting. It says, Leonardo DiCaprio has a red mango yogurt machine in his office. Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan have been photographed clutching Pinkberry yogurt cups while ducking the paparazzi.
Yeah,
frozen yogurt, trendy during the 1980s and early 90s, has made a comeback, but this time with an edge. Companies selling the soft stuff are opening stores with hip decor and pulsating music that draws a young crowd. Celebrity bloggers like Perez Hilton have posted pictures of young Hollywood stars spooning yogurt into their mouths. Veterans of the last yogurt boom, including TCBY, Penguins, and Tasty Delight, are still operating, but their new arrivals have a different business model, going after a younger market that wants not just a frozen dessert, but an experience. We always talk about a lot. Even some shows we've had, some different franchise systems, they always are trying to sell more than just the product.
That's true.
It be like an experience.
Right, absolutely.
The question for Pinkberry, Red Mango, and the rest of this new generation of yogurt purveyors is whether they'll be able to grow into national brands, especially since their target market is known as having fickle taste and a short attention span.
Interesting. Oh, that's funny.
It says, moreover, the industry is already getting crowded, raising the possibility of a shakeout at some point. In Los Angeles, where the industry's latest incarnation began about 2 years ago, consumers can now choose from chains like Snowberry, Roseberry, Berry Good, Kiwi Berry, Yogurtland, Yogurt Berry, and Iceberry. What the hell is this? It's coming into like a berry joke here. What's all these berries?
There
Are you
go.
A berry fan? I don't know what's I'm going good. On here. I have heard of Yogurtland, but some of these other ones I've never heard of. The concept behind Red Mango and Pinkberry is to keep customers in a store rather than have them buy their yogurt and just leave in a more traditional yogurt and ice cream places. And so the decor out of Pinkberry's includes $350 Philippe Stark chairs and a $391 Leilint lights.
That's interesting. I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? I think, you know, McDonald's used this approach when they kind of added I don't call McDonald's frequently, but I understand, like, they added, like, video games where kids can play. And, again, you have kids, so you know they have the playground, you know. So I'm suspecting that, you know, more people go in there and, you know, they stay in there a little longer. What happens is, hopefully, you know, you buy more product, you know. So it is an interesting marketing strategy. So that's what happens.
This guy, Dan Kim, chief executive of Red Mango, says, we're trying to create the coffee house environment. We're creating an ambience.
Wow.
A point of relaxation, a meeting place. And unlike a variety of flavors offered by the older shops, Pinkberry and Red Mango generally just offer two flavors, plain and green tea. They're more tart than the previous generation's products. The average purchase price is about $5, but can double with added toppings like fresh berries, granola, and so forth. Both Pinkberry and Red Mango rely on slick marketing campaigns and also celebrity connections. The trend towards healthy eating might be a key to the longevity of the new frozen yogurt chains. It says they started in L.A. and flourished there for a reason, says Tom Coggy, a Seattle resident who tried Pinkberry after hearing the buzz about it.
Right.
Because L.A. is all about image and hype and being seen doing things that are cool. People see a photo of Paris eating Pinkberry and they want it. And I just want to go on the record that that's not myself.
Okay. I was curious about that.
But Pinkberry, I've been hearing a little bit of news about them. They now operate 59 locations, California, New York.
Right.
Plan to open about 75 more by the end of this year. And Red Mango has about 30, and they're looking to do more. The question is, are you going to just be a niche player, or will you be a national chain, says this guy Harry Bowser, VP of NPD Group, their consumer marketing. They clearly are getting a nice buzz with the population, so we'll see what happens. But I thought this was interesting, a little article about how this industry is you know, sort of coming about.
It does seem like there's a lot more, you know, I mean, reading these articles in segment one, you know, it does seem like a lot more franchisors are trying to provide the customers with an experience, you know, when they go into,
right,
you know, especially with the, you know, food franchises, of course, you know, it's kind of using like the Starbucks model, always saying that, you know, Starbucks is really an experience, you know,
right,
more than anything else, you know, so that is interesting. That
And the article went on, but that was pretty much the gist of it.
Right.
And here's something, Marty, from Vetrepreneur Magazine, September issue, in their franchising and franchise profile section called Just Kidding Around, Army Vetrepreneur Now Shapes Young Hearts and Minds as a Kitty Academy franchise owner in Holly Springs, North Carolina. Article written by Rhonda Sanderson. Thought this was pretty interesting. It says, every time his mother asked him what he wanted to be when he grew up, Marvin Brown gave the same response, a businessman. Though his mother has since passed on, Brown stayed true to his word by opening his first business, Kitty Academy. Brown, 42, served as a commissioned officer for 9 years, reaching the rank of captain in the U.S. Army as a staff chemical officer, platoon leader, company commander, and system acquisition manager before transitioning back into civilian life and working for General Mills and PepsiCo. While he enjoyed his work, long hours and frequent travel prevented Brown from spending enough time with his family. You know, this is
right,
a classic type of situation here.
Sure.
So he began searching for a career that would not only afford him that luxury, but that he could apply his military training to while making a difference in the community. When he came across Kitty Academy with its impeccable business plan and nurturing approach to education, he knew he had found the opportunity he was looking for. He and his wife, Deborah, opened their Kitty Academy in August of 06 in Holly Springs, North Carolina. They've been molding young minds ever since. He says, I know a lot of small business owners who stop into their stores once a week to check in, but after nearly a decade of military responsibility and discipline, I knew that there was no way to run a business, said Brown. Deborah and I are at our Kitty Academy every day because we have a vested interest as to what is happening in our school.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing a child learn new skills and grow as an individual is truly an amazing sight, but knowing that I am playing an integral role in that process for so many children in the area reaffirms that I made the right choice with Kitty Academy.
That's interesting. I wonder, it doesn't sound like, unless I missed it, Don, if he, I'm curious if he did go the franchise broker route. It sounds like this gentleman kind of did it on his own, right? I mean, he kind of knew what he wanted, or he knew what he was good at.
That's a good point. You know, it doesn't really make reference to that, but they ask a few questions here. Is what do you enjoy most about owning Kitty Academy? Says he likes living the American dream. I always wanted to own my own business like many other people, but unlike many others, I actually took the plunge and did it. That's something we've talked about a lot. People are nervous to make that move, and there's a lot going on. That's how sometimes a franchise consultant, like you mentioned, gives people that comfort level and the confidence and really talk about, you know, learning about themselves. And
the match, absolutely. Right. I'm always amazed at, you know, the franchisees who, you know, found that perfect match for themselves. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, because a lot of times when we speak with franchise brokers, you know, a lot of times they'll say, you know what, originally, I mean, they kind of persuaded or introduced new industries that a prospective franchisee just never would have thought of, you know. And I always go back to the guys from Enterprise Rent-A-Car when they were looking to go into their own business, and they went into the window cleaning business. You know, it's just such a great story. And that was a perfect match for their lives. You know, the franchising for them was a means to an end, you know. So, but I think they never would have thought of it in a million years. So it's always great to hear how someone found the perfect match and they did it by themselves, you know. So.
And he was further sold than Marty with their great support system. He thought it was a great turnkey operation.
Right.
It's been open 2 years, and he's talking about how he gets the same level of support today as he received from day one from the franchisor.
Right.
He plans on opening his second business in the next couple of years, having a second school. And the last question here, what is the top attribute you learned in the military that contributed to your success in business? He goes, I would say my organizational skills that helped me tremendously. Being organized lessens the stress level of running a business. There's a lot of documentation, especially in the early stages of trying to establish the business. You may deal with the same company, but different people within the company. And he says he resolved the situations just by providing documentation, whether it was confirmation of a received fax, email, or signatures. You know, obviously they're happy looking to expand, and also Kitty Academy's based out of they're based out of Abington, Maryland.
Oh, really? Okay.
I know they're a pretty solid children's education franchise. So
they've heard good things
for this
about
guy.
Them.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's a pretty interesting magazine, this Vetrepreneur. They always have a franchising section, talk about a couple success stories.
Yeah, we've had a couple articles, I think, or you've referenced a couple articles from those guys, you know, and I always thought they were fantastic. So it's That's great. Well, today, Don, we have a great show. As I mentioned earlier, we're meeting with Dr. Scott Shane, who is the author of The Illusions of Entrepreneurship. And I was saying earlier that this book was certainly an eye-opener, I think, for both of us. The Illusions of Entrepreneurship is an excellent and essential resource for anyone who has ever dreamed about starting a new business, also for investors in startups, policymakers attempting to facilitate the formation and survival of new businesses, and researchers interested in economic impact of entrepreneurial activities. So very, very interesting topic. And I'm going to bring Dr. Scott in right now. Let's see if I can get him in. Looks like we're having trouble bringing him in. Well, do you have any other articles, Don? Well, I'm trying to bring Dr. Scott.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be with us in a second here.
That's
the way
see.
It goes. Something here, Barney, I saw from smallbiztrends.com, smallbiztrends.com, pretty interesting. It says 5 success tips you never learn in school.
Right.
This was just written recently by Anita Campbell. It's my wife's maiden name, Campbell, so maybe attracted me to this article. Anyway.
Yeah, and I know Anita, actually. She's fantastic. She I think she actually has a show on Blog Talk Radio, and I've actually been a guest on her show. Yeah, she does, yeah. So she's great.
So she's probably the most important success skills I've learned in business involve overcoming my own negative emotions and personality traits and habits. Call it learning life skills for entrepreneurs. And she says she'd like to share 5 lessons that she's learned. And number one being stop being a control freak. She says, learning the fine line between giving direction and delegating is one of the toughest things for me. My natural tendency is to want to do it all myself. And,
right.
Of course, people can't, and I know that's the problem I have sometimes. You want to just be in control and and do everything. She says, I have to keep checking myself. I'm far from perfect, but I found that it helps to visualize the power of leverage. Getting 5 sets of hands, working on your business means greater success than 1 set of hands, even if those hands are part-time, just a few hours a month. From a service provider. 2, she says, build incrementally. There are different schools of thought about growth. Some are of the go big or go home approach, been there, done that. The approach that I feel most comfortable with is one of developing products and services gradually, making incremental enhancements. Start small, spend as little as you can, and build on early successes, and quickly dump the stuff that doesn't work out. If you take this approach, your risks of going down the wrong path and spending lots of development time and money on offerings that fail will be minimal. 3, it says, think about a business problem the last thing at night. This was sort of interesting. Often you hear advice that suggests you should, go over all the situations and problems in your mind, especially late at night when you want to get some sleep. But for solving business problems, I found the opposite works. I will sit down at my computer for 15 minutes right before I go into bed. I'll look at an email message that outlines a troubling problem, or I'll just jot down a problem and study it. I say to myself, I'll think about this overnight, then I go to bed. She says that your subconscious mind works while you sleep. I got nothing
true,
to worry about. Then, for me, it's just the opposite. I find late at night, I'm just too tired from the day.
Right.
I actually do my best thinking early in the morning when my mind's fresh.
Interesting. Oh, good news, Don. I think we have I thought we had Dr. Scott. Hopefully he calls back in.
Okay.
We're able to pull him back in for a second. So go ahead. I think he's going to call in another minute, and we'll bring him right back in.
But you and I have talked about this, being an entrepreneur. I find myself thinking about business a lot when I'm just alone, just driving in the car. Or sometimes early in the morning, at night. I don't know if that works for me, but she says that it might work. Think about business, and your subconscious mind, I guess, can help you in that area. Any thoughts on that, Marty?
Okay, Don. I just actually spoke with Dr. Scott, and he's actually going to be calling in like 30 seconds. So.
Okay. Yeah, I just lost you for a second there, but I can finish this up next week. It's 5 success tips. Stop being a control freak. Build incrementally. Think about a business problem the last thing at night. Then other things maybe we'll talk about next week is treat your computer systems like a factory production line and pretend you have an accounting department. So she brings up some interesting points on those.
Okay, good. Yeah. Hey, Dr. Scott, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
How you doing, Dr. Scott?
Good. How about yourself?
Good, good. Dr. Shane, joining us is my co-host, Don Johnson, and Don is the president of Diamond Financial Services. And I know you wanted to say hi, Don, to Dr. Shane.
Hi, Dr. Shane. Thank you for coming on the show. Martin and I have been looking forward to this a few weeks with the book you wrote, really some new information for us. So we look forward to speaking to you. Thanks for coming on.
Great, thanks.
Dr. Shane, we always like to start off by asking our guests, where are you calling from this morning?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay, great. How's the weather there today?
Actually, it's quite beautiful today.
Good, good. Well, September's like that, I know, in Ohio. You know, we've actually had a lot of franchises from the Ohio area, haven't we, Don?
Yeah,
franchisees,
yeah.
You know,
right,
doing the show over the last 2 years.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Shane, how did you get involved or interested in entrepreneurship?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I'm the child, actually, of two entrepreneurs. And
oh, interesting.
You probably don't know this, but I actually have an area of research where I look at genetic factors that lead people to become entrepreneurs. There's actually some evidence that our genes affect that, so it's
right.
Quite possible that's why I got interested.
That's interesting. You know, this is one of the questions or debates we had. We did a blog a long time back, Dr. Shane, as far as, you know, can entrepreneurship be taught or are entrepreneurs born, you know? So it's interesting that you actually mentioned that.
That's the first I've heard of it, too, as far as,
right.
you know, could be in your genes. I guess maybe my dad will be happy about that. he's owned some businesses and has done pretty well. He was a pilot, but he's done some other things. I'll have to talk to my dad about that.
Right.
Dr. Shane, why did you write the book, The Illusions of Entrepreneurship?
Well, I actually have been researching entrepreneurship for close to 20 years now, and what had happened was I started seeing things that I thought I knew to be true, and when
mm-hmm.
I'd investigate them, I realized that I was wrong. And I thought, well, you know, if I have this list of things that I thought were correct, and it turns out when I looked at the data carefully that I was wrong, probably a lot of other people had the same illusions that I did, and, you know, I picked up enough of these to think it was worthy of a book.
Right, absolutely.
That's interesting. If I read how you just coming across a lot of people didn't have the correct information, the facts as they're starting a business, which obviously
right.
can be crucial. I mean, you have to be on your game. I mean, you have to make sure that business plan is solid. The odds are against you to begin with starting out.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have wrong information, I guess you go down the wrong path pretty quickly. So it's interesting how you keyed in on that and saw that as an opportunity.
And then the other thing is that entrepreneurs actually tend to be over-optimistic. We have some evidence
right.
that that's true. And so what happens is if you've got wrong information out there combined with a tendency to be over-optimistic, you can really get a lot of people into trouble. And, you know, people are investing real money that they can
mm-hmm.
lose in this. And you want them to actually know the right odds. There's nothing wrong with taking a risk if you know the right odds.
Right.
But what you don't want to do is take the risk thinking, you know, you're going to be really successful when the odds are really against you.
That's true, yeah. I mean, a lot more people today, Dr. Shane, are using their retirement funds, you know, to get into these things, you know. So the book really does make you, I think, you know, think twice about going into your own business, that's for sure.
We talked about that in segment one, Marty, about
right.
People going into business. You know, make sure you have that cash reserve. Make sure you have plenty of working capital. I mean, that's a whole other side conversation, but one important step of the whole process of starting up a business. Dr. Shane, who should read the book?
Well, I think it's useful for a lot of different audiences. First, I think it's useful for anybody who's starting a business or thinking of starting a business because, you know, they probably want to get the facts right and not have a bunch of illusions about things like where they're going to finance their business. You don't want a bunch of people thinking, oh, they're going to get venture capital money when they're really not.
Right.
So entrepreneurs are one set. Another side is the investors, the people who are putting money in, because you don't want people thinking that their chances are really high of making a huge amount of money off of the typical entrepreneur, and then, of course, thinking that the entrepreneur they backed is somehow the real lemon out there because they didn't do as well as some expectation. And then I think policymakers are another important audience because we've got a lot of governments, the local government, state government, federal government, all trying to encourage economic growth through entrepreneurship.
Right.
And the key is they've got to understand what kind of entrepreneurship is generating jobs and generating wealth. Otherwise, they're just going to waste our tax dollars.
Absolutely. For our audience, Dr. Shane, what questions does The Illusions of Entrepreneurship address? Again, Don and I both read the book, but
Well, so one question is, what does it take to make a new business successful? And one of the things that the book points out is that a lot of the things that we believe, that it's a lot about us as people, are inaccurate. That things like the kind of business opportunity you have and the industry that you're in account for a lot of performance. And I think what happens to a lot of people is we have this belief as human beings that we want to over-ascribe our performance to things that are about ourselves and not about things we can't really control. We can't change our industry very well. We can't change our business opportunities very well. So we like to think that it's us that matters. And it turns
right.
out that, sure, individuals matter, but the business opportunity matters to a great extent. And being able to pick that, and what the book tries to do is help people see, well, what is it about a good opportunity? What is it about an industry that makes it good for startups? The other thing is that people make a lot of mistakes that could easily be corrected. They go after the wrong kind of financing. They don't do a business plan well. They don't form a good team. They don't set up the right legal structure. And one of the things that the book tries to point out are kind of the easy-to-fix mistakes, the things that are under
right.
your control so that you can fix the odds. I mean, you can't decide whether, you know, your particular product is suddenly going to become the hottest thing ever, but you can avoid making a, you know, mistake about getting, you know, your cash flow wrong because you don't have a financial structure in place to manage cash flow. And then I think that the other thing is, that I think is very useful is for people to get a realistic understanding of where money comes from for financing businesses, because I think people labor under a lot of illusions about where that capital comes from. And one of the goals of the book is to say, hey, look, this is how people really get money, and this is what they're going to have to do. And you're probably not going to get venture capital. You're probably not going to get business angel money from a lot of businesses. What you're probably going to do is either invest your own money or you're going to personally guarantee loans from a bank.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's my business, as you might have heard, Dr. Shane. We, you know, our company's talking to many people every day across the country, and there is a lot of misconception. You know, sometimes people think, you know, they can, you know, get financing, for example, as long as they just have good credit. But there's a lot of other things that lenders look for, you know, with getting financing. So we're always in that, you know, consulting and you know, giving advice mode to people. And helping people with the whole financing part. You know, so really, so what you were just addressing is, you know, really people have to do more due diligence, and you know, for people to do their you know, research on an industry and so forth. And I guess you recommend that people should you know, should align themselves with consultants and specialists to help them in this process of considering starting up a business, or if they decide, you know, to make sure they go about it the right way.
Well, you know, they need to get information somehow. Now, you can get information by getting help from consultants. You could get information by kind of doing research. You could get information by, you know, talking to people in an industry. I think one of the misconceptions that people labor under is that entrepreneurship is easy. You can just, if you get an idea, whatever idea you get, you should just go run with it. You should go do it. There's this emphasis on being active and going and doing as opposed to thinking about whether an idea is any good. And one of the things that I think is really important that people always keep in their mind is that once you pick an idea to pursue, you've basically cut yourself off from pursuing a better idea that comes along later because you've committed to one idea. And so what you probably want to do is go evaluate an idea and say, is this one really worth doing? Because if I look at it and I say, oh, it's not worthwhile, I still have the option to do a better idea when it comes along. But if I go pursue something that isn't very good, you know, I'm probably going to end up locked into kind of either trying to make a go of it and possibly failing.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. Were you surprised, Dr. Shane, by some of the findings during the research phase of writing the book?
Absolutely. I was particularly surprised about things like how people really finance businesses. I was surprised at how frequently debt is used because we have this view somehow that people get equity a lot, and they think it's that, you know, a small number of businesses get equity and they get written about a lot, but getting outside equity is pretty rare, so the financing stuff surprised me. The effect of how important industry is and what industry you're in, that surprised me a lot too. I thought it was important, but I didn't think it was as important. I think that what also surprised me a lot was how many things matter that are easy to fix, and yet people still make those mistakes because they just don't have the right information. As an economist, you sort of think that the system works pretty well, and that there's not going to be a lot of things you could do to improve just because you didn't know. We tend to think people generally know what they're doing, and then it's things beyond their control that affect their performance.
That's interesting. I was amazed, Dr. Shane, at the self-employment rates. Everyone's always talking about the rise of entrepreneurship here in America, and looking at the other countries, compared to the United States. I think Turkey might have been one of them, and Mexico was another. Were you surprised there? Again, I see a lot of textbooks. Again, you're a professor, talking about the rise of entrepreneurship here in the U.S.
There were two parts of that were very surprising to me. So it turns out that the U.S. isn't very entrepreneurial by a number of measures, self-employment, number of businesses that get created every year, per capita, that kind of thing, and that it used to be much more so, that we're on a declining trend, and also the fact that places where we think of that have a lot of high-growth entrepreneurial activity within the U.S., places like Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. they actually aren't very high on the total amount of entrepreneurial activity, and places that have kind of many fewer high-growth startups actually tend to have a higher proportion of people running their own businesses. And it's interesting, but if you kind of explore it a little bit, you realize that it makes a lot of sense that a lot of times what people are doing is they're starting businesses because they don't have a better option, and that the businesses they're starting aren't particularly successful, and that as countries get better and you've got a lot of economic growth, people opt in to go into work for somebody else because things are better. And you can think of this as Walmart is a lot more competitive than a lot of the small independent businesses that it's essentially replaced. And Walmart doing that and replacing a grocer and replacing a florist and replacing the bike store and replacing all those things, that's actually lowering the rate of entrepreneurship over time. The other thing that happens is you think about a company like Google, and you think about how they're providing all these high salaries and all these good perks to people, and a lot of people, when those are their job options, will say, well, maybe I shouldn't start a business if, I can get free sushi for lunch at Google.
Right. Interesting.
Are there temporary ups and downs in what you're speaking about, Dr. Shane, like in a down economy or heavy layoffs? Might be a spike in people starting up businesses. It could go up and down, but the overall theme, and I was surprised, you just think with the increasing population, there's going to be more people starting businesses, more entrepreneurs, but you just found really the opposite.
Let me be clear. No, this was on a per capita basis that we see the decline. So the population, in an absolute sense, we have more entrepreneurs, but as a percentage of the population, it's shrinking. And yes, there are ups and downs. This is the overall trend. That one of the things that's interesting is that down economies tend to cause a spike in the increase in the amount of entrepreneurship. And one of the reasons why is that when people are unemployed, their odds of starting a business go up a lot. And so when you get more people being unemployed, you see a spike in the aggregate statistics.
Interesting,
yeah.
And I just wanted to ask real quick, backtrack a little bit. What is your definition of an entrepreneur?
A person who starts their own business.
So really as simple as that?
As simple as that.
This is all very interesting, and Marty and I, being in the franchise industry, I just want to ask you, what are your thoughts on the growth of franchising over the last decade, Dr. Shane?
Well, what I think is interesting, you probably know, I've written on the franchise industry,
yes.
Particularly from the point of view of franchisors, and what's interesting is that there seems to have been a plateauing of kind of the franchise activity. And it hasn't been spreading as much as it had, say, over the decade before that. And it seems a little bit like franchising is big. It's a big chunk of the economy, But it's hard to break into a lot of new industries successfully, industries where franchising historically didn't work. You get a few of them where that tends to happen, but for the most part, franchising seems to work in certain sectors of the economy well, other sectors of the economy not that well, and we aren't getting the huge growth in that activity that we got 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Well, Marty, last week, remember, we talked about how doctor's offices, chiropractors and specialists are starting to franchise their concept. I thought that was pretty interesting. So maybe, Dr. Shane, that's an example. The jury's still out if franchising could be successful for, say, podiatrists or chiropractors or, the specific niches, dentists in franchising. It's kind of an interesting comparison, right?
Right, and, in the book, that I did From Ice Cream to the Internet on franchising, one of the things that's pretty clear is that these medical areas where we've seen this before, we had hemorrhoid clinics as one area.
Good example.
We've had dentists actually for quite a while without kind of a huge growth in that activity. One thing that's difficult about these things is that it's hard to sell them to a lot of people because you can't really sell the franchise to somebody where there's no dentist involved, right? I mean, you've got to have some professional that's providing that service.
Right.
And in fact, one of the areas that could possibly see some of this franchising growth are these quick care clinics where people have toyed with the model of, well, should they franchise that or should they own them directly? And the big question is, well, is the market big enough, right? If I'm going to have an ice cream franchise, pretty much anybody who wants to run their own business, I could sell that to. If I'm going to have a quick care clinic and I'm going to need, to have doctors or nurse practitioners involved, can I sell it to a third party who's going to hire those people, or do I need to sell it to them? And if I'm selling it to them, is the market big enough?
Industries like senior care and just services in general just had a lot of big growth in franchising.
I
guess franchising kind of rode the tide of the growing population, not the the older population. So it's been pretty interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good. The senior care though is a good example of something where it works pretty well because you don't need a tremendous amount of technical expertise to provide that service. That's different than a dentist, right? I mean, you need a lot of technical knowledge to provide that service.
Right. Good point. What advice would you give to an aspiring entrepreneur looking to buy a franchise or start their own business? You touched on a few things, but I'm sure you have a few more, Dr. Chain.
Well, so one thing that I think is important that people consider that's actually often not thought about enough and directly relates to franchising is thinking about the decision about buying versus starting from scratch. One of the things that we see is that businesses, when you buy a business from somebody else, those businesses tend to perform better than when people start businesses from scratch. And the question is, can people buy them at the right price so that the numbers work just as well as starting from scratch?
Now is that buying an existing business or buying a startup franchise concept?
Buying an existing business.
Okay.
Right? And so one of the things then about that is, one of the advantages is if you got a business and somebody else has run that business, there's some evidence that the business works. And the same thing is true when you look at a franchise, right? Which is that if you're really talking about buying a franchise where there's some evidence that that business is ongoing and been successful for a number of years, you're going to get a real advantage. Now, again, it's always a question of making the numbers work because it's more expensive than starting a business from scratch. It could be a better business, but the numbers work worse for you because you didn't get it at a good enough price to make it work. So the first point that I'd make is that it's really important for people to actually not just immediately fall into, I'm starting a business, I'm starting from scratch, I'm starting with my idea, and I'm going to go from there, buying either a franchise or an existing business from an independent, is certainly worth considering. And the second thing is that it makes a huge difference when you're buying a franchise, whether the franchisor is new or the franchisor is well-established, because a lot of the value in the franchise is that system is there, it's the system works, the system's there to support you, and one of the problems with a new franchise is that you can certainly have some that will turn out great, but a lot of them just fail. And then if that happens, that's not the greatest arrangement for the franchisee.
That's interesting. One of the things we were talking about earlier, Dr. Shane, in segment one is the importance of having a niche in the market. And I recall in the book you mentioned that I think it was 30% of the people starting up a business didn't believe they had a competitive edge. Were you surprised about that? I mean, I was.
Yes, I was. I was actually very surprised at the idea that people would be willing to start a business for which they didn't believe they had a competitive advantage, because it makes you wonder what their logic was for thinking that business
right.
would be sustained and would keep going. Another thing that's surprising that's probably related to that is a lot of people start businesses and it takes them a long time to get that business going. And I think what may be happening is that people start without a competitive advantage, and a year later they realize that, you know, it's not enough. They haven't gotten that business
right.
up and running, and they probably won't, because they realized later they didn't have a competitive advantage.
Exactly. Interesting. So what are some other industries, Dr. Shane, that are popular for startups? Where should people be looking?
Well, this actually goes to a really important question, which is that when you ask the question, what's popular, and you don't want to couple that with where should people be looking, because
right.
in fact, it's the most popular industries that tend to be the worst. And
interesting, right.
You know, one of the statistics I've got in the book, which is very, really frightening, is that the rate at which people start businesses in industry, right, how popular that industry is correlated 0.77, a really high correlation with the failure rate in that industry. People systematically pick the industries
right.
where their odds are most against them, and it's because they're easy to enter. So, you know, when you say what's popular, I would say, you know, there's a bunch of things that are popular. It's personal
right.
services, it's retail, it's construction, but that's not good. And the difficult part is that it turns out that most businesses are not great businesses to start, and that if you want to start a good business, it's going to be harder to find, and there's going to be a lot more obstacles that are going to suggest that maybe you don't want to pursue that, and make it a higher hurdle for you to overcome to say, oh yeah, it's worth trying.
That's interesting.
And I guess a popular industry, something like food, which is what, Marty, maybe 40-50% of the whole franchising industry. It's something easy to go
right.
into.
Right.
You know, I guess that's a good example, Dr. Shane, of someone choosing food because it's there's so many food franchises, but maybe there's a higher chance of failure with certain concepts, maybe.
Right. And so and food is a good example of something. Any kind of food and retail are in industries with very high failure rates, and this is where, you know, people might really seriously benefit from thinking about buying a franchise from an established system, because your odds are so much against you in starting a business from scratch in those industries. Now, there may be other industries where, you know, franchising offers much less of an advantage and startups do, you know, particularly well. A kind of the opposite to that might be computer-related businesses, where startups actually tend to do incredibly well. Actually, a quarter of the past 25 years, a quarter of all the Inc. 500 companies are computer-related. And there's very little kind of value-added typically provided by franchisors there. And so that the balance is probably going to be different in different industries. But, you know, food is the poster child for industries where it's hard to do well as an entrepreneur.
And the computer and related services to that industry is interesting, because most people can probably just dip into that type of franchise fresh with no experience at all, which is what franchising is all about. But, you know, sometimes it's nice to have a business ownership experience. But so I thought that was an interesting industry you brought up. Why do people start businesses in general?
Well, here's an interesting fact. So the number one reason why people start businesses is because they want independence. They don't want to have a boss. They want to be in charge. And what's problematic is that that tends not to be something that motivates people to perform very well financially. It's sort of, you know, if my idiot boss can do this, I can do it too. So
right.
I'm just going to go and do it because I don't like working for that idiot. And the problem is that generally is not something that makes people very successful, but it's the dominant reason why people do it.
Right. And how many jobs do new businesses create? I guess you talked about that in your book, of course.
Right. So this is something that's kind of, on average, not very many. So if we look at businesses that are under 2 years of age in the United States, they account for 1% of the jobs in this country, which is minuscule. And one of the things that gets lost in this discussion always about job creation and entrepreneurship is that small business does not mean new business, right? A small business could be quite old. You can have a 100-year-old small business. A small business is a function of the business's size. And because so few new businesses are successful, it takes a while, and they don't start with very many jobs. It takes a while for you to get any of them generating many jobs, and when they do, it's a small percentage of them that accounted for most of that job growth.
So you're saying 1% of all the new businesses starting nationwide, whether it's a franchise, non-franchise, just all businesses, and you're saying just 1% of the total jobs is just created from that. I thought that was higher as well.
1% of all employment in the private sector in this country are businesses that are 2 years old or younger.
That's amazing, right? Isn't it? It's incredible.
And to get to a point where the majority of jobs are in businesses that are businesses that are young, you have to define young as 10 years old or younger. And the thing about 10 years old, right, is if you just use the analogy of children, you realize that 10 is not a newborn, right? 10 is not new. 10 is actually fairly old, and there's been a lot of businesses that have failed by the time you get out there. In fact, close to 3/4 of all the startups are gone by the time a business reaches its 10th anniversary.
Wow, it's all interesting information, statistics. We're speaking with Dr. Scott Shane, wrote the book, The Illusions of Entrepreneurship. And earlier you talked about that you were surprised when you're doing your research on how people are financing their startup business. How maybe let's talk about that in a little more detail. How do entrepreneurs finance their startups?
Well, the main way that people finance the startups that most entrepreneurs don't take enough into consideration is with their savings, right? That they don't get money from anywhere else. That is the vast majority of people, that's how it's financed. And so the idea that you're going to raise capital is something that only matters for a minority of entrepreneurs. The second fact that's important is that businesses that are 4 years old or younger, the majority of the money they get is debt, not equity. And so we have this illusion somehow that you can't borrow money for young businesses. In certain industries, in certain sectors, that's very difficult to do, but in general, it's not that hard to do. And in fact, the number one source for capital for businesses that are young are actually banks. And that's something that people forget. They say, oh yeah, I'm going to go to friends and family, I'm going to go to business angels, I'm going to go to venture capitalists, all those things. I'm going to go, get a corporate strategic partner. I'm going to get all those things. You bundle all those things up together, and they still finance fewer businesses than young businesses than banks do. But the catch, the piece that's important, is that most new businesses do not get financing on the merits of the business itself. Most of that borrowing is somehow personally guaranteed by the entrepreneurs. And so one of the things that I think most people are not taking enough into consideration is that the normal financing pattern for a new business is, I use my own money, I transition into somebody else's money that I have personally guaranteed, and then if my business is successful, I can transition from that to borrowing on the merits of the business itself. But that's much further downstream, and
right.
My personal credit and my money are very important in my ability to finance my own business.
Well, I'm not surprised what you're saying, because as time goes on, you're reading more about people having more debt and less savings, so it is tougher for someone to use their savings to start up, and that's all I do are small business loans, so I'm glad to hear your research is kind of backing up my industry and that more people need to go to a bank to to get financing because our numbers are increasing as well. I'm just surprised maybe there's not a few more people who are aligning themselves with those angel investors or private investors partners. I tend to think there's more of that going on, but you're showing it's actually there's not that much of that activity, Dr. Shane, right?
Right, and part of this is that very few businesses actually stand a chance of generating the kind of growth that would provide sufficient returns to an equity investor. It's just actually pretty rare. So, in fact, the thing that I think is important to keep in mind is what the typical business looks like. Half of all businesses that get started project sales of $100,000 in 5 years. Now, if you're starting with half of businesses like that, you're getting down to a very small number of businesses that are planning to generate the kind of growth it's going to take to interest investors. And so you certainly have them, but they're a small portion of the total. And banks and other kinds of sources of debt financing can finance operations in a way that makes sense, where people could service debt, but the business would not generate a high return on the equity that was invested in it.
And I definitely confirm with you that a lot of the banks we work with do look more at the individual, the strength of the individual, rather than, say, for example, the franchise business they're starting, which is important, but most loans get approved based on, the individual and their credit and their net worth and, liquidity and past experience and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's interesting. Are there characteristics, Dr. Shane, of successful entrepreneurs? A lot of times, Don and I have read articles, talking about the importance of persistence and, motivation and all that other stuff. Have you come across anything like that in your research?
So here's the thing that we've tended to find in doing the research is that characteristics of people seem to explain more about their decision to be an entrepreneur than they do about performance as an entrepreneur. And so people, if they are kind of really want independence, they tend to start businesses, but that desire for independence doesn't really translate into much of a performance effect. It turns out that there's very few of the personality characteristics that people describe as being so important for the performance of entrepreneurs really pan out. Persistence is a good example. People say persistence, that's an important characteristic. It's important in the sense that it's necessary, but it's not sufficient. There's lots
right.
of, right, if you're not persistent, you're not going to do very well. But being persistent is only can they keep you in the game, and there's lots of persistent people who fail. I like to use the example that in the year that Bill Gates started Microsoft, there were a whole bunch of people probably just as persistent as he was who started businesses, and none of them created a business like Microsoft, right? And in fact, a very large number of those persistent people failed. So persistence isn't going to account for the performance. We like to think that, if we have the right stuff, we're going to do well. The problem is that really having a good business opportunity, managing it well in an attractive industry actually tends to work a little bit better.
That's fascinating.
So it's the quality of the service or brand.
An industry, right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that people actually greatly underestimate, right, is thinking about the basic question of why the world needs this business, right? Most businesses that people start, one of the reasons that they fail is because they're unnecessary. The world doesn't need yet another of that business, right?
Right.
If the business doesn't solve a problem that was unsolved before or doesn't solve it in a way better than existing businesses solve it, there's no reason to have that new business. And most people don't go into entrepreneurship thinking about that. They actually think, differently. They say, I'm going to start a business. I'm going to have the same product, and I'm going to sell it to similar customers as my previous employer. And the problem with that is, there's really no advantage over that previous employer, so the previous employer's business was successful, but the new one that starts to compete doesn't do as well.
Interesting. What's next for you, Dr. Shane, after this book? I know you're doing a lot of interviews and things like that, but what's in your future? More books?
Well,
or?
I actually have recently finished up another book that's going to be coming out this winter on angel investing that looks at what's really true and not true about angel investing and how people can become successful angel investors and how people can better get money from angels. That book's called Fool's Gold.
That's an interesting topic.
Great title, and that's an area where a lot of people really need to be educated in that. I know personally I'm in the money business, but I don't really know much about that at all.
Right. That's interesting. What's the best way for someone to buy the book, Dr. Shane, Illusions of Entrepreneurship, or any of the other, I think it's 11 other books that you've written up to this point?
Yeah, so I generally suggest that people just go on Amazon.com and either look up my name or the title, because Amazon discounts all of those books, and you might as well save a little money if you're going to get it.
That's fantastic. Right. We're going to put some links up on our websites, too, as well, right, Don, on Franchise Interviews and also on Blog Talk. I know there's a big picture of Illusions of Entrepreneurship on the homepage of Blog Talk Radio this morning.
Right.
So, but I want to thank you, Dr. Shane. The book was, again, definitely an eye-opener for myself and Don, and I guess the thousands of other people that have read the book. You know, it's just it really made a very big impact on our lives. So thank you for writing it.
Yeah, great work, Dr. Shane. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks, Dr. Take Shane. Care. Have a great
bye-bye.
Day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Great book, huh, Don?
Yeah, I think it was I thought it was great having him on the show to talk about, you know, some of these myths, and he did, you know, research.
He did a ton of research.
I'm going to talk to my dad. I mean, you know, it's in my genes that I have to be successful here.
There you go. But next week we have, who is it? We have Brian Spindell of, was it Postnet
Franchise, right?
That's right.
Which
would be a great show next week, and again, for our listeners, you can actually buy Illusions of Entrepreneurship. You can go to our websites. We'll have it in our franchise book section as well, and we'll have the links up there to get more information on Dr. Scott. But he did a fantastic job. I could have spoken to him for probably a couple more hours, you know.
Again,
great job, Don.
Week,
yeah, and again, go to franchiseinterviews.com, gofranchise.com. franchisefunding.net. You can always call us at 610-905-2919. We'd love to hear feedback from you. You can email me at marty@franchiseinterviews.com and don@franchiseloans.com. What else,
good.
Don?
I think that's about it.
And we'll talk next week, Don.
Have a nice day, Marty. Take
you
care.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.